Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1648, Small Actions for Big Impact in Your Career, with the authors of the forthcoming book, Micro Skills.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
There's one step that gets brought and threaded throughout the book, and that's your personal board of directors. And we love this one. And I'll just say that, you know, having a personal board of directors can help you with almost every micro skill we talk about. And that is, for people that aren't familiar with the concept, it's just your go-to people, the people that you trust and trust you. And there's a safety.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. Let me ask you, do you want to build your career without burnout? Do you want to get things done efficiently, build your reputation, become maybe a subject matter expert, and nurture your network? Well, our guests today have written a book called Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact, that can help us all become better at our jobs across all professions with this framework called Micro Skills, which is built on a core easy to learn principle that every big goal, complicated task, healthy habit can be broken down into small, learnable skills that can be practiced and incorporated real time. Authors Adara Landry and Risa Lewis were both emergency room doctors. They're also educators and mentors, and they've experienced and heard about the challenges with navigating the workplace. Adara is an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. She co-founded Writing in Color, a nonprofit that teaches the craft of writing. And Risa Lewis is a professor of emergency medicine, a designer, an entrepreneur, and an award-winning educator, mentor, and point-of-care ultrasound specialist. She's also the host of the Visible Voices podcast. Their book, Micro Skills, is packed with privileged information, they say, and regardless of status or rank, we can all embrace this framework. Here's Adara Landry and Risa Lewis. Risa Lewis and Adara Landry, welcome to So Money and congratulations on your new book. You both co-authored a great new book called Micro Skills, which we're going to get into in the next half hour. But first, welcome and how are you doing?
Thanks so much for having us. I'm doing great. It's like not too cold in Boston, so I'm loving that. And I'm enjoying speaking to both of you.
Did you both meet in the emergency room as doctors? What was your first encounter with each other?
Farnoosh, thanks for that question. We often get that question, like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
We have a lot of Venn diagram overlap, as I like to say. We're both emergency medicine physicians. We're both ultrasound trained. We're both medical educators. We both like storytelling, specifically the written word. So it started pandemically. We started writing together. And truth be told, this amazing product that is the book is thanks to Adara. She came to me with the idea of writing a book together after we'd had a lot of articles together that made us both really feel that we were sharing content to the world to be better at work.
It's interesting. It's an interesting journey from being emergency medical physicians to writing a book that is categorically a business book. And I know you're both very creative too. So the business book, interesting, maybe not really the departure that one would assume. So tell me a little bit about how that came to be, why you decided to target people who are browsing the business section as opposed to all the other categories that you could have probably written beautifully in.
That's a great question. And we definitely get that a lot. The truth of the matter is we are employees, right? For a large corporation, we interact with, we call them patients, but effectively they are in the customer service realm, the customers, clients. And we have peers and colleagues who we have to collaborate with and interact with. So on the most fundamental level, it's like any other workplace, right? It's like working in a law office or in a big consulting firm. You have to be able to interact with people. You want to also grow your career. You want to take care of yourself. Like all of those themes that are throughout the book are very universal. And so if you look at a lot of the business self-help books, the vast majority of them are written by older white men who are in very, very, very corporate America. Well, most people aren't in that exact same scenario. And so we really wanted to bring on fresh perspective, right? It's definitely unique having two women physicians writing in this genre, but we also wanted to show that we can do it and that like women can be key opinion leaders, key thought leaders on how to navigate the workplace. And write a book that is for everyone. This book is not just for doctors. It's not just for women.
The book, again, is called Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. Your promise on the cover of the book is buy it on Friday, be better at your job on Monday. Mm. We, as human beings, we love to be able to distill complexity, right? I mean, that makes sense. We like small action steps, baby steps, but of course we want the big results at the end. Psychologically, why does a micro skills approach work better than any of the other sea of strategies and frameworks out there when it comes to managing work life?
You bring up something that listeners may already realize, the breaking down into small steps. And we're not the ones that invented this, oh, you should break it down into small steps. We start by aligning ourselves with the listeners, with the readers, with the audience to say, listen, we've been there. We've had these overwhelming projects, these overwhelming tasks, these things that we put off, and even these like habits or skills that colleagues seem to just get. And we're like, how did you know that? Or that must be innate. You must just naturally be an athlete. And through reading, through experience, and quite honestly, through our medical training, we realized, no, you can actually break things down. And by breaking them down and doing little digestible, concrete, fundamental building blocks, those blocks can help you achieve what seems so big and unattainable. But also, you can translate some of those little blocks, little skills into other projects, tasks, skills, habits. And one of the ways we think our book is different than all those out there in the business self-help category is many say, well, you know, go out and get a financial advisor, you know, or just start saving for retirement. But they don't tell you how. And if you don't come from a place of knowing how, being resourceful, being given resources, having access to resources, that's just overwhelming. And you shut the book, you don't even buy the book because you don't even think the book is for you. It doesn't speak to you. So number one, we walk people through the how. And also, we try to assume to the best of our abilities that there is no assumption of access. There's no assumption of resources. And we state out front in our introduction, we get that not everybody starts at the same place.
One of the other things about doing it as a micro skill versus like large, big ambitions or goals is that when you break things down, you can actually really expose your knowledge gaps and the areas that you need to focus on. And so Reese and I are educators. We have taught students, residents, fellows, like all the hierarchy of medicine. And when we're teaching someone a particular skill, you do it step by step. And by doing that, you're able to really say, oh, okay, so the problem is that you don't really know how to, you know, insert the needle correctly into the patient's skin. So let's focus on that skill. And so that's translatable to the larger aspect of the workplace. If we're talking about communicating, and if you're trying to teach someone how to be a better public speaker, and you talk about, you know, eye contact, hand gestures, slides, posture of your body, interacting with the audience, like all of those small little things, you could say, okay, this is why you feel uncomfortable. You don't like to make eye contact with your audience. So let's talk a little about how you can do that. Mm. So a lot of it's just exposing those knowledge gaps.
Yeah. One of the first challenges or complexities that you want to simplify and provide those micro skills and steps for the reader is the burnout issue, how to build your career without breaking yourself. And again, going back to perhaps the target audience here of women professionals, which we know during the pandemic, at least, like with we, I mean, I can speak personally. It was a very challenging time because as someone who has a business and also two children, I mean, the topic of burnout, I feel like there aren't enough episodes on this show that we could have done. And we have done many episodes on financial burnout, career burnout, household burnout, burnout. Can you share some of your applications, your micro skills for managing that piece of it? Because I feel it's so foundational. If you don't address this first, the rest of it doesn't matter. Like, good luck making eye contact or communicating. It's like, it's the mental health component of this is, I think, needs to be addressed first.
So as emergency physicians, people are like, oh, yeah, you know burnout. So there was a recent Medscape survey that looked and spoke to physicians from different specialties, and emergency medicine topped the charts in terms of rates of burnout and depression. But again, the book is not actually for physicians. It's not even specifically for women, although we like that you highlighted, it does speak to people that have in any way been marginalized in the workplace. And often that is women. Not only women. So, healthcare is very similar to many industries. And that's actually why we think this book goes across and does speak to people in all fields. The workplace does not value self-care, and it does not teach you how to take care of yourself. It doesn't model, and it doesn't necessarily reward. And so our chapter one is micro skills for self-care, specifically to try to empower and teach and show how to the audience, the listeners, the readers, what they can do to sort of build in certain skills to bring them along from entering the workplace to navigating and staying in early, mid, and even late career. One example we talk about relates to you and your work, and that's finances and actually taking care of your financial health. And we actually break down for the reader how to do that.
So you say addressing your finances is sometimes at the root of what can protect your well-being and your it must be a component of self-care, which is not something we often associate financial care with. We don't think of financial health as self-care.
Well, I think also what happens, you know, in our specialty, as Risa mentioned, there is a lot of burnout. And so because there's a lot of burnout, there's a lot of discussion about attrition or wanting to leave. Many people can't leave because of their financial obligations, whether it be their mortgage, student loans, or who's paying for health insurance, right? Who's covering the family? Whatever it is, they feel locked into their job because of the salary and benefits. Mm. And so, you know, when we organized this book, we put self-care at the front, to your point earlier, like you have to be in a good spot before you're thinking about eye contact with someone else. And that's exactly how we modeled the book. And we framed the book as take care of yourself so that you can take care of the team, and then you can take care of the work. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important fundamental sort of pyramid within the book that we sort of carry throughout. As far as, you know, examples of self-care and a real life example for me was on meetings and how I was just overwhelming myself with meetings, especially meetings during the evening time. And I also have three children, and at a time where I had two kids, and that was during the height of the pandemic, I still had a ton of meetings on my calendar. And I remember getting one particular meeting request that was literally at 6 or 7 o'clock, like peak dinner, bedtime window. And I, you know, was trying to set up for this panel. By the way, the panel was on work-life balance for women, just as a reminder. And I'm sitting there setting up for the panel and my kids are like literally trying to get into my room and they're like, mommy, mommy. And I'm sitting there answering these questions about work-life balance. And on the other side of the door, my kids are like banging on the door trying to get into the room. And that was a real life wake-up call that this is not, I'm not caring for myself at all. And this is not sustainable. And so that was really the moment for myself where I said, self-care starts with creating boundaries on when I have meetings.
Right. And yet, and this is all happening in the context of, as you mentioned, the work life, the workforce, which is not sympathetic to personal care. And yeah. And so we have to be, I get it, as workers, we have to be at the forefront of our own self-care. But how do we do that in that context where you could get backlash? You could experience backlash from that. You know, I am all for developing boundaries and saying, no, I'm not going to make this meeting happen. But there may be a cost there, right? A political cost, a financial cost. And so I'm sure you address this in your book. What's your advice for someone who's like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to prioritize myself in the workplace. And I also want to protect my job because they're, you know, again, it's a culture clash. Like as individuals, we want to protect this culture of protecting ourselves and our well-being at work. The bottom line is the bottom line. It's profit. So how do we kind of balance that and protect ourselves?
It's a great question. And you are speaking to two people who are on the same page with you. So we actually have a chapter, Micro Skills for Learning Your Workplace Culture. And you're exactly right. When a certain person or certain people or certain groups of people have decided the tenets of the culture and the tone of the culture, it's really hard to change culture. And so one of our thoughts is that you personally, individually cannot change the culture. However, you can do things to take care of yourself while navigating the culture and slowly helping to skill by skill change the culture. So we talked about the self. And then the next, when we talk about the team, one example that we talk about is calling in sick when you're sick. So like doctors do not call in sick when they're sick. COVID changed everything because we were mandated that if you are infected with COVID, you had to stay home, CDC guidelines, hospital policy, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes when you join a team and you have the ability to model behaviors, model support for your teammates, those are some of the ways that you can start establishing change. And so we talk about, now this is again, chapter one, self-care, but jumping ahead to workplace culture, say it's not the culture to call out sick, which again, that's the healthcare medicine culture. We think that, you know, it can start with you, meaning you're sick, you or your teammate is sick. You can encourage them and support them. Say, listen, you don't feel well, or your child is sick. Why don't you not come to work? I will cover you. And then you flip it. And then when you're sick, you say, listen, I'm not feeling well. I'm sick. I'm not going to come in. In sort of that sort of modeling. I'm going to start this again, if I can. So learning your workplace culture and sort of changing that culture are two different things. So once you learn your workplace culture, you can bring some of those micro skills for self-care to help you navigate that culture. When it comes to culture change, you are spot on. It is hard. It is difficult to not do what's been done before you, or that, so that whole, like, we do this because this is the way we've always done it. But we all know that that's not sustainable. And we know there's something called the great resignation happening in healthcare. So again, I'll just use healthcare as the example, that if something doesn't change, then we're not going to have healthcare workers. We're not going to have people taking care of patients. So what we see is there's broad, big institutional changes that need to occur. And then there's the small changes that we can do as individuals. And one example I'll give is if you're sick, that you call in sick. If your teammate is sick, you tell them it's okay to call in sick and we as the team will make sure the work gets done.
Just to add to that, there are some small changes that have huge impact in regards to the culture that we mentioned in this book. And I honestly think the first one, this is coming again from the perspective of being a parent, is when we schedule emails to be sent out.
Yeah.
And when we have meetings. And I really think something that is implementable literally the moment you read this book is thinking about when you're reaching out to someone. What are they doing? Are they on vacation? Are they on maternity leave? Are they, you know, it's just a holiday and they deserve to take that holiday off, and who knows what they're doing, but they deserve the day off in that time and space. But just being mindful of the culture of connecting with each other outside of business hours. And yes, there are workplaces and teams that communicate 24/7. My husband is a part of a startup. They communicate 24/7 and they want to communicate with each other 24/7. I'm not like that. And so, you know, that would be a terrible culture for me. But I think thinking about when you're reaching out to someone and sort of invading their time off is important.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
I want to discuss in a minute another aspect of your book, which is how to become a subject matter expert using micro skills. But sticking with this, we've touched on this now a couple of times, and I want to dive a little bit deeper on it, which is the pandemic. And if you had written this book BC before COVID versus AC after COVID, how would it be different? In other words, what has COVID taught us? There were things that we did during the COVID era that were very knee-jerk, but I think some things have endured because we've learned that this was actually a better way of doing things. For example, you know, calling in sick when you're actually sick. What are some other nuggets of wisdom or models in the workplace that you think have been positive since COVID, have been informed by the COVID experience, and how the micro skills almost play into that because of this new framework, this new dynamic?
I definitely think probably that chapter on communication is very different now than BC before COVID. So, you know, I think just us right now having this conversation virtually, perhaps I assume podcasts were happening this way before, but mm-hmm. generally meetings now by default are going to be virtual, especially if you're in the remote environment. And so I think that adds a lot of complexity to interpreting someone's emotions, their perspective, understanding how they communicate, right? Like not all of us are comfortable in front of the screen. And so it doesn't mean that we're upset or quiet or angry. It could just mean that this isn't really our natural way of communicating. We prefer in person across the table communication. So I think definitely COVID has changed the way teams interact with each other. And there's a lot more reliance on software like Slack or Teams, or even, you know, we talk about asynchronous communication, a lot of like audio messaging that you can use now on software apps where you're not necessarily having to call someone, but you don't necessarily want to type something. You can just send a voice message instead. So I think the communication aspect is the most different in how we work. And I think that brings a lot of challenge, especially for people who work remotely and they're and they struggle with connecting.
I think another thing that we have a whole chapter on finding your next opportunity. And I think extreme situations such as the COVID pandemic made people consider what they were doing, with whom they were doing it, and how they were doing it. And so I think it actually pushed many people to consider their next opportunities. So we actually walk the reader, audience, listener, or whatever you want to say, how to do that and how to really take inventory of where you are, what you've done, your skills, and how those can translate. And also not to just sort of knee-jerk reaction like I need to change, but to think about it over time. There are many things that come across our email inbox or come across in terms of conversation with inspiring people that, wow, that's a great idea. Oh, that sounds like an amazing training program. Oh, maybe I want to get that degree. And keeping a list. List those down that you can always refer to and update and think about, because maybe the time to do that advanced degree is not today, but maybe in a year you're going to be in a really good place for it.
Right. Well, as a subject matter expert, as are you both, I'd like to talk about this. You dedicate pages in the book to micro skills related to becoming a subject matter expert. First, what do you mean by that? And how can we start to plant those seeds? I think you've already kind of touched on one thing, which is like maybe you do go back and get further education, maybe not today, but at some point, and putting that on your, you know, potential to-do list, which is not a small thing, but you know, it's inspiring, at least to write it down. But tell us a little about that section of the book and why you felt that was important to include.
So subject matter expertise can also be reframed as being a key opinion leader or a thought leader, someone who is just very knowledgeable on a particular topic. And this topic can be as general as AI, or it can be something super particular like AI in preteens, right? And you can think about a narrow or wide focus, but it's something that you are just very comfortable speaking about and people respect your knowledge. This was born out of just Risa and I's personal experience being in medicine and how, you know, we both worked and trained at a very academic institution. And we had a lot of people around us who were tapped on and called upon to speak at national or international conferences. They were consultants in industry. They were writing books and articles on that same topic. For me personally, I saw that and I thought, I have absolutely no clue how to get there. Like there's no path. There's no one sharing how I become a thought leader. And that's not to say that they're not, these people who I work with are bad people. They're busy. They don't have time to sit down next to me and say, this is step A, step B, step C, you know? But without that knowledge, it's just a much harder challenge. So personally, the reason why I love this chapter is because this is the one that I struggled with the most when I was early in my career. And I felt like I was sacrificing a lot by being, you know, here in Boston. My family's all the way in California. I have two or three kids at home, just depending on the time of the year. And I'm here at work and I don't feel like I'm progressing. And it's like, what is the bigger purpose of me being here if I'm the same person year four as I was year one? And so that really was the drive to try to learn how to become an expert in something. For me, it was, being an expert in career development and mentorship and helping other people navigate their own ambitions. And so there was a whole process to gaining that, right? It's like building a network, which we talk about in this book, by the way. It's like, how do you brainstorm ideas? How do you build a network of people who you can test those ideas on? How do you become a speaker, a writer, a collaborator? It's a whole process that if laid out for you, it becomes much more clear.
I'm hearing through your answers too, that while the promise of micro skills is read this book today and be better at your job on Monday, there is an element of patience that is required. There are steps, and it's not like one step is going to be the silver bullet. It's like you have to build on all of these micro skills and steps to get to maybe that other side, to that end of the tunnel or whatever you want to call it. Maybe share a little insight into that and why that. Maybe I'm just misinterpreting, but I feel like this does require some delaying of gratification or some patience at the end of the day.
I really like that share and you sharing what you're hearing. And it's both and. Like, I think truly the reader can flip to a certain page in the book. And we designed it that way. It doesn't have to be a cover to cover read. People can go and use it as a guide to learn about specific aspects. However, these are small little building blocks. So that's not like one item is going to all of a sudden, get you to the finish line. So there is a slow build. And also there's one step that gets brought and threaded throughout the book, and that's your personal board of directors. And we love this one. And I'll just say that, having a personal board of directors can help you with almost every micro skill we talk about. And that is, for people that aren't familiar with the concept, it's just your go-to people, the people that you trust and trust you. And there's a safety. Now, these aren't necessarily your like confidants about all the personal aspects of your life. This is, again, we're talking about the workplace and your professional journey. Now, there's a lot of overlap often with personal and professional, but your go-to people for questions, your go-to people to brainstorm, your go-to people that you trust to say, can you give me feedback on, are also, as emergency doctors, we keep bringing up these stories because strewn throughout the book, part of the design of the book is that we share stories as illustration for the micro skills that are generalizable for everybody. And we have all had bad cases, bad outcomes, and you have these people that you call. You call just, you don't want them to solve it. You just want to be able to talk, get it off your chest, and they can listen and just hold space for you, or they can give you feedback, being like, I've been there, and here's what I've done, or here's what happens, or it's going to be okay. And so your personal board of directors is one of the micro skills for the greater build to big micro skills that carries people throughout. So that is a slow build for sure, because that table's open. People come and go from the table, but we always have open chairs.
Just to double click on that a little bit, because I think sometimes we go and we pick the wrong people. We pick the people that we love because, well, maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a best friend. But when it comes to work and your career and these other external issues, who are these ideal folks and how do you go about inviting them into your circle? Are we talking about mentorship here? Is it people at work? I would love to hear some tips on that. I think that's a hard one.
Yeah. And I think the reason why it's hard for many people is lots of folks are intimidated to reach out. Also, it requires time and energy, right? Bandwidth to think about bringing more people into your life. Because when you do that, that means more meetings, more conversation, more time that you're putting into another relationship. And this sort of goes back to, like, if you're not in a good place, like individually, then you might not want to start building a team around you because you don't have the time to do that. In our book, we mention that this does not have to be a formal process where you say, Dear Risa, would you like to be part of my personal board of directors? Like, you can lower that threshold and just make it a simple 20-minute conversation where you're just getting to know the person, right? You're getting to know their energy, their knowledge. You're seeing if there's an emotional click, testing out the waters and see, like, overall, do I trust this person? Is this someone who I can turn to if I need them? And, you know, that doesn't have to happen every single day. You're not having these meetings all the time. You can space it out and sort of titrate to your own personal schedule, your own personal needs. I will say that to your question about the mentorship part, you know, a single person for me can be a mentor where they're giving me life advice and we're sharing a lot of personal experiences, but they can also very quickly in the same conversation turn into a coach where they're teaching me a very concrete skill set and providing me a lot of hard insight that is very tangible and actionable. And sometimes they're a sponsor and they can mention me when it's time for me to get recognized for my work that I'm doing. And so that same person can have multiple different roles. But that same person could also just be one thing. Like, it could be that one person you go to for parenting advice or personal finance advice. And you wouldn't go to them for something else. You would only go to them if you're having issues with, like, just money management, because that's what they're really, really good at. And so they can, in that conversation, teach you about mentorship. I mean, teach you about money management through mentorship, through coaching, through advising. I will say, as far as building, like, the mechanics of building your network, that also is not going to happen overnight. One tip that has helped me a lot was joining social media. So I'm on social media a lot. I don't post as much as I DM. I like DM all the time. And that's how I meet people and ask for meetings. And every once in a while, not always, I'll meet with someone and I'll ask them if they have anyone who they think I should also meet with. And so that, like, becomes what I call the snowball effect of gathering those people and collecting those names. And I should mention this, like, you're helping as much as you're asking for help. And so you should also be thinking about ways to help these people in return, so it feels mutually beneficial. It is a lot of work. It's a whole new collection of people in your life that needs to be nurtured and needs to feel cared for. And so if you just don't have the bandwidth, and I think forgive yourself and say, I can't network today or tomorrow, but maybe in a week or so, I can start thinking about reaching out to, even if it's just one person, 20-minute call, asking them a very particular question.
Yeah, it's that one question at the end, like, who else do you recommend I can connect with, you know? And also, how can I help you, to your point, to kind of keep it feeling like a partnership as opposed to just a take. Yes. Thank you both so much. This is wonderful. And I would recommend anybody wants to consider the two of you on their boards, you can buy their book and you can learn through their advice that way, Adara Landry and Risa Lewis. Thank you so much. Your book again is called Micro Skills. And is it available everywhere? Everywhere, right?
Yeah, it'll be available at all major bookstores April 16th, 2024. You can also request it at your local bookstore, independent bookstore, and your local library. It'll also be on Audible and other, like, audiobook bookstores.
All the ways, yes. And this is airing right around the book launch. So we will encourage everybody to go grab a copy and an audio copy, because who narrated it? Did either one of you narrate?
We both did.
Oh, you both did. Wonderful. That's special. Thank you again.
Thanks.
Thanks to my guests, Adara Landry and Risa Lewis, for joining me. Their book, again, is called Micro Skills. It's out soon. You can pre-order it now everywhere books are sold. I'll see you back here on Wednesday, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.